Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of Poulton Civilization Site. Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Cardamandua.
With guest co-hosts...
Provost Harrison.
Whitlish.
Don't you worry.
That's all that's coming through from a end.
Sounds like me when I'm talking to my wife. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 65. We're joined here today with Makalua.
Hello.
Bitlich.
Good morning.
Imran Siddiqui.
Hello.
Rich.
Hello.
Daniel Quick.
Hello, all.
And I'm Dojo Boy.
Three items under the news of interest, designing for free, followed by March Mayhem for game developers, and then big, huge games for sale.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
For free from Soren Johnson.
Which he doesn't mean he's going to design to for free for you.
Damn it!
Oh, no, no, no. It's on the lines of you pay to play. Even though you don't have to pay, what you're paying for, it actually improves your avatar, your character, in this game. Let me just read the opening paragraph from Soren Johnson. In China, the new MMORPG, entitled ZT Online, has gained significant popularity. With over 10 million users and an ARPU of $40 per month. Like many Asian games, ZT is free to play and focuses primarily on player versus player gameplay. You actually use real cash, real money, to improve your character within this gaming environment. CK1 posted a comment on this after the articles. I don't like games where you can buy in-game advantages. That's why I stopped playing Travian. I happily pay the supporter subscription for Hatrick each year, especially because the money gives you mostly cosmetic things and a few statistics, and Hatrick can be played very well with just 1 or 2 hours per week.
I think it's a decent idea to have free and then be, hey, if you want to have more stuff, you can pay a subscriber fee. But if you don't, you can just play for free.
That's why we have Poly Plus.
There you go.
I like the idea of free-to-play, you know, and being able to have microtransactions in a game. I think it probably allows for a continuing source of revenue for developers. Personally, though, I shy away from it. Maybe it's my own personality type, but I wouldn't want to go down that road. I'd be spending all my money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Apple now is even in the new OS for the iPhone, allowing for microtransactions. Which is going to be curious how that happens on a 99-cent game. You know, what's the next transaction going to be, $10?
Well, exactly. I'm not a big fan of the idea myself, I must admit. Maybe I'm just a bit old-fashioned. I like to get a game and I like to play it. I don't like my playing to be limited depending on how much money I'm willing to cough up for that game. And it's a vicious cycle, potentially. I mean, once that's doing it, upping the odds, then it can get to be very expensive until we end up in a place we don't want to be with gaming. Especially because there were some posts that mentioned we're applying it to Civ, for example.
Yeah.
Don't like the idea of that at all.
Yeah, that's what this whole thing is about. It's because he's, you know, designing for free. He's talking about designing for these games that are free to play, and you have the microtransactions, and that you have to find a balance between what you can get with the microtransactions and what you can do for free to play. And he mentions in there later in the article as Puzzle Pirates as being a good example of how to do it.
Mm.
There's people who have never put any money into the game at all, and yet they don't really have a disadvantage against the players who have put a lot of money in. Because most of the stuff that you use the doubloons, the microtransaction money for, not everything, but a lot of things are just cosmetic. Basic things that you need to do in the game to get ahead in the game are all free. So if you want the extra fancy shiny sword or something, you can have that.
And the other thing about Puzzle Pirates is items that you are able to purchase in-game often require both types of currency. The currency of money and then also the currency of time. This time spent actually playing the puzzle games. So with this dual currency system, what happens is, as Soren says, is there's a natural market dynamic keeping the two sides balanced, quote-unquote. So you got $1,000 to spend, and someone has spent 1,000 hours playing the game. you need each other in order to be able to buy those items. I like that balance between the two types of currency and also the type of items you can buy. Some are cosmetic and some actually affect the gameplay. You mentioned Travian. You actually related it to Bolton Plus, which is...
not really the same.
No, it's not the same, but it's comparable in the sense that a Bolton Plus, not charging you for access to content.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to give you access to something that other people don't have. It's flavor. It's kind of like, okay, in the game, purchase this product so you can have shinier clothing. Yeah, it looks nicer, but it's not going to mean that you're going to be able to get farther along in the game. Just like buying a Bolton Plus does not mean you're going to be able to post more, for instance.
Wait a second, why not?
You post enough already.
The interesting about Travian, which is a massive multiplayer online strategy game, not only does it offer access to better products, but it unlocks an improved interface to make playing the game more efficient. So it's not like, oh, you don't like the default style on a Polton's forums? Well, buy Plus and you can have access to all of these different templates. I mean, that would be a comparable thing.
Actually, from what he says in there in the article, it's almost more like buy Poly Plus and we'll actually let you send a private, like a basic thing. Because what it's talking about in there, his example, is about a build queue. You can't even put a build queue in unless you buy the Plus thing. And that's just,
Yeah.
See, crippling functionality for the sake of making more money doesn't seem like a good idea either. Wouldn't you hate it if every time you did something in Civ 4, you couldn't automate a worker to do certain things? You have to update it every single turn to continue something. It would just be immensely frustrating.
That's true, but I mean, on the other hand, one can see where it would be somewhat attractive to some people. It's like, well, I never do a build queue. If I can get it cheaper and not have to worry about that, oh, why not?
Yeah.
In some aspects, it is somewhat attractive, but I know totally what you're saying. It could be like the first few months about when Vista UAC controller, you know, it comes up every single time and you're like, oh, I gotta do this again. I gotta hit continue for doing this random thing. And of course, then pay for feature thing, it'd be like, oh, I gotta pay like an extra dollar now and then download this other thing so I could do this. And it might get annoying on the one level like that, but I guess it depends on pricing.
I think Soar knew that this was going to be on Polycast because to some degree addresses our initial response in that third paragraph where he talks about Westerners being a little bit appalled by this. But in Asia, where they're looking at a lot of piracy, that this is one attempt they've made to restrict it. I like that because it gives us a perspective on culture. And also I like that because of, I don't know if any of you guys read the book Tipping Point by Maxwell Gladwell, I think, or something like that. Where he talks about manipulating the environment to get the results you want, which is interesting for me to see things like this kind of taking place, even though they're diabolical.
One of the reasons why developers like MMORPGs is that, hey, you gotta pay every month, and if you want to play, you have to sign in with your person and log in. You can't really pirate it, necessarily. You can probably pirate the underlying disc or whatever, which is, what, $30, $40, but then you gotta pay the $10, $12 a month in order to play it, and you're gonna log onto a server every time you play the game and make sure that people don't pirate. And I think a lot of it seems like, especially as broadband usage increases, as a lot of games want to get involved with, hey, you got to log onto the internet every once in a while, just so we can see that you're not pirating games. And I think you're right. In the West, maybe some people are appalled by it because of privacy concerns.
Yes, I mean, I'm really opposed to that idea going that strongly in that direction, because for the game, I want to be able to play it without having somebody snooping into what I'm doing all the time.
Tells you something about how good the Puzzle Pirates model works, because they have two servers that are the regular subscription type where you pay like $15 a month, but they have four that are the other kind, the digital currency.
The free?
Yes. They're getting far more people to try it and stick with it and keep going than they are with trying to get people to pay $14 a month, even though some of these people are probably paying more than $14 a month buying the other currency.
The two-track model actually may end up paying off for companies like that, too, because people will buy this little currency stuff piecemeal by piecemeal, not realizing that they're spending actually $20 a month.
Exactly.
This whole thing, it's a slippery slope, actually, because I was involved on certain online games where you pay for the extra. And at first, you pay a little money here, a little money there, but then you realize you've ran out of gold, if you will, or gold doubloons, or whatever the game uses, that you end up going to pay even more. And you start adding up how much it's costing you after you've been playing it for 6 to 8 months. You're like talking $200 or $300. nickel and dimes you to death.
Remember on that article reading a post from a particular person who replied called Louis B and saying he spends $200 a month for something called...
Oof.
I'm trying to remember the name. It was... No, I've lost the name now. I didn't write it down. But there was something he was using, a similar version to the C4, he'd be willing to pay $60 to $100 a month, and I thought, that's ridiculous.
I saw that. It's like, come on. Doesn't matter how much money you spend on these games, there's always some Yahoo in there that'll be spending more than you.
Yes.
So any bonuses you actually get is going to be counterbalanced by someone else breaking the bank.
Then there's a potential there to introduce other tools which make you relatively unstoppable for even more money.
Mm.
As you say, slippery slope. It can go out of control.
Well, I like the idea, though, that having a two-track type of thing where you can play for free but buy and dime stuff, or you could pay maybe $15 a month and get everything. So if you find your calculator thing and you're like, wait a second, I just spent $25 a month on this nickel stuff, you can convert your character or game, whatever, avatar, into the per month $15, the traditional World of Warcraft pricing or something like that. That might be not a bad thing. At one level, it'll allow people to try out the game for free, or if you only want to play an hour or two a week or something, and you pay $5 a month, maybe it'd be worth it. But there's also another track where if you find yourself going to be paying a ton of money, but you can pay $15 a month and just do it that way.
The game Louis B. was referring to is Entropa Universe, which is...
I was about to ask if that was it.
Ah, yes.
There's people that have stuff that's worth literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in that game, and they have actually sold it for that, for real-life money.
On eBay or whatever?
Yeah, something. it's insane.
I find it very worrying that people can spend such insane amounts of money on a game. Surely half the joy is to start from the beginning and build up. I mean, that's exactly one of the reasons why we play Civ in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as much fun to say, oh, I'm going to buy the Roman Empire dominating half the planet in 1800 AD. Well, thanks, but I've not really had the enjoyment of doing that.
I'm sure we've all heard of the stories of people selling World of Warcraft characters for thousands of dollars to people. If you have that much money, why are you wasting it on that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Years ago, I sold a spare Ultima Online account because it had a house that was in some area and housing was really short at the time. I got $700 for it.
Whoa! Wow.
Nice.
Did you claim
yeah.
that? Did you claim that?
What? Yes. Good grief, people.
I remember one story very recently, or maybe not that recently, where there was some transaction over some kind of sword in some game like this, and one ended up killing the other person in real life because of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that just happened.
Yeah.
Well, that's just not playing with a full deck.
More ways than one.
Well, that's the thing with people killing each other over Dungeons & Dragons when it was first out. Someone jumping off a roof, sneaking, they can fly.
Yeah, or people going out and killing other people because they killed people in the game and they want to know whether that would actually kill somebody in real life.
Right.
It's like, okay. Yeah, that's obviously the game's fault.
Yeah, some people just get a little too invested in these things, and which is why, I mean, I think a lot of the pay for stuff might get a little out of hand. Someone gets too addicted and they start spending, like, said, $200 a month and think, well, then, you know, no big deal.
It's like a gambling addiction, if you will.
Mm.
Yeah.
You get hooked into it, and yeah.
Yeah, maybe even more slippery slope.
And we spend a lot of money on all types of entertainment. It's just bizarre for us to understand.
Yeah.
With those kind of addiction things, even that dual currency system in Puzzle Pirates, if someone has the money, or at least is able to get access to the money, say, through credit, and then is spending all of this time playing the game, that's true, that's not going to be able to address that. But on the microtransactions to begin with, as Troy mentioned at the beginning, in the ZT Online, they've got 10 million users, ARPU, average revenue per user of $40 a month.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So it's not that every user is spending $40 a month, and then you start doing the math, and it's kind of like,
you either have the users spending nothing if the other guys are spending $120 or something dollars a month.
Exactly. The thing about ZT Online selling items, the items are attached to the owner. You can't, once you have them, you cannot separate them, so you don't have that. But the way in ZT Online, the way to gain equipment, is where you pay real money to open treasure chests. But they are in-game slot machines, as Soren says, because these chests only have a small chance of producing something useful. And finding the best equipment often requires opening thousands of chests. And then as a further incentive, every day the company awards some other kind of award on the person who purchases the most chests.
Oh.
So I'm like, okay.
That is quite a clear definition of gambling.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
There's no interpretation there.
I agree with Soren. He said, quote, it's like a con job designed to suck away all of the players' money, unquote, as with ZT Online. Now, that's not to say that it's entirely the game's fault and the player holds no responsibility whatsoever. It's kind of like getting what we were saying about people killing somebody in real life over something in a game. Whenever people have said that to me, like, video games cause people to kill people, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, someone robs somebody, uses gloves to break in and not leave fingerprints, so obviously the people who manufactured the glove are guilty of that crime as well, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question about whether or not you like this approach and the question about the culture difference between the East and West, I think with massively multiplayer online play games as an example, role-playing games, that has a basis for this pay-for model. But if we're going to do that pay-for model, I think the dual currency system in Puzzle Pirates is the way to go, because you avoid it from being, well, yeah, you can pay for stuff, but it's only aesthetics, cosmetics, big deal. Or it's something more significant where the richest players are going to be the dominant players because they get access to certain things that other players don't. Or like with Travian, part of it is you get access to something better with the interface.
Right.
There are a number of angles you can take that. If we were looking at it in terms of a strategy game, like doing it for a Civ 5, no. Sid has talked about doing a massively multiplayer online Civ game. He's talked about how would that be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you were going to do that, a massively multiplayer online game has different design decisions required along with different business decisions. If you were going to design a massively multiplayer online game and you want to do that fee-based system, that makes sense. I think that's fair to look at that. But don't try to bring that into the strategy system. Have a massive multiplayer online game, but then also have your Civ 5. It's kind of like with the argument when Civilization Revolution came out. Oh, no, that's Civ 5 now. That's Civ 5 now. They're abandoning the PC. No. It was just, this is something separate that we're trying. And if Firaxis approaches the massive multiplayer online game the same, no, we're not abandoning strategy gaming. We're trying something else. And then if they do that, the Puzzle Pirates model is the way to go. As far as the concern about, you know, people wanting to be able to buy a boxed game and it's got everything in it, yes, we're doing that. But it just seems to be a natural evolution of, okay, you've got the game. Now there is expansion packs. Okay. There have been some cases, say with Civilization Revolution, where some of the downloadable content or DLC has been paid for. Some of it's been free, right? You're tempting people with the free stuff, and then it's like, oh, if you like this free stuff, then you might like this pay-for downloadable content.
A lot of games now are going to downloadable content. A lot of games are testing that out, especially like some role-playing games where they'll add different areas that you can download. It seems to be something that is continuing onward, and you might see in games in the future a little bit taking a page from this type of free-to-play, pay for other stuff is maybe the original game will be $40, but then, oh, look, we have this other area where you can buy for another $10 or something like that.
Yeah, you know, there are people who are interested in that. They're going to pursue that.
The other thing about downloadable content is what makes it, I think, a little bit more interesting to developers is, well, you know, you do a downloadable content, you go online to get it. And guess what? They can verify if your game is actually legit as well at the same time. So I think that's why they really like it, because they're like, oh, look, this can cut down on piracy.
And you could also do that with, oh, here's the latest patch to the game. Oh, you pirated the game? You shouldn't have done that. And what's one of the reasons why you shouldn't have done that? Here's a practical consideration for you. You're not going to be able to play with who knows how many people. It's not because they know you pirated the game directly. It's because you don't have the latest patch. And then if someone says, well, go get the latest patch, you're going to be like,
So that's what his problem was last week.
I can't play tonight, guys.
But the objections that people have to it, now not everybody does this, but I have antivirus software. I pay for the software, but I also pay every year. It's not a monthly fee, but I pay every year to continue to have that software be updated with the latest definition files. And it's also true that if you don't pay the subscription, it's not just that you can't get access to the updated definition files anymore. The software itself stops working. I don't think the software should stop working. I think it should be you don't have access to the latest stuff. There is room for this system, even in a Civ, and that's part of the reason why I raised this issue, is because Civ had talked about a massively multiplayer online game. There's another issue for me to be able to continue to pay a subscription model every year. The issue of how much it is, and that's a totally separate issue, but the premise that I have to pay a renewal every year to continue to get access to the latest things, it's kind of like if we were to deploy this game and you're going to connect to the server to be able to play it. The developer is still working on it. The developer could still be working on it years from now. And so just like with the antivirus companies, they're still out there. They're finding the latest threats. They're neutralizing the threats. They're communicating and they're distributing that. By all means, fair to say, you need to continue to pay a subscription fee in order to get this, because sure, we've got all this money from people buying this software at the outset, but maybe there's saturation now, other people have other choices. How are we going to be able to continue to support the users? And really, you're paying that subscription model is helping you in the end, because if so many people didn't do that, right, then there wouldn't be a sustainable model, and then they wouldn't continue to support the software, it wouldn't be updated as well.
I think the problem I have, maybe being a bit old-fashioned in terms of how I like to play my games, but I wouldn't be very keen on the idea of having to pay once and then pay again every year. One, I think it's pushing people towards piracy, because people are going to go, well, if you're going to be that cheeky with me, I've got to have less respect with you. I think there's a difference we need to distinguish between, for example, an antivirus package. There are new viruses coming into being all the time, so there needs to be a certain cat and mouse, one keeping up with the other, which does need some financing. Which I don't quite see as being quite the same with games, or certainly not to the same extent. This is the whole principle behind expansion packs, for example, why they want to move the game onto the next part. They sell an expansion pack, and I'm quite happy with that, but have to have a subscription every year to actually be able to play the game at all, I'm not happy with the idea myself.
If they were going to do something like that with a Civilization V, I would agree.
Yeah.
If it's going to be, let's say it's a Civ, it's a massively multiplayer online game, it's based online, and this is the way it's going to be from the outset. It's not something that I'm interested in either.
Yes.
I don't object to it.
Well, it's a very different model of game altogether, isn't it, if they're making a game of that route?
Exactly. Some of the games that Soren talks about, part of it's implied that there is some software that you do install as a base. Some others, I think, are just right through your web browser. The only thing that kind of makes me cringe a little bit is, what if for whatever reason, the company shutting down would be the ultimate thing, but what if they decided, we're not going to support this game anymore? You've been paying for this software all of this time. Everything is residing on the server, or at least some of it.
Yep.
And if something were to happen, whether that's temporarily or permanently, recognize that fact. That's another reason why these kind of games, I'm kind of like, ooh, no way for me to really save what I'm doing.
Hmm.
Well, you could apply that to every MMO ever, because eventually they're all going to shut down at some point. And then what happens to all those hours you spent getting your elite purples? They're gone.
It's another rock band. Deep Purple.
No, elite.
Elite.
In conclusion here, perhaps...
Fire beware.
Yeah.
Jarrell, over at Civilization Fanatics Center. The Escapist, an online gaming magazine, is holding a March Mayhem tournament pitting 64 game studios against one another in a format that all basketball fans will recognize, a fourth division bracket where each game developer gets seeded or ranked compared to others. Individuals can then vote for each matchup, choosing between one of two studios and allowing the winner to advance. Last year, Turbine Incorporated beat out Harmonix in the final. In the 2009 version, Firaxis Designer of the Civilization series was seeded 6th in the Western Division, facing off against the 11th-ranked Bungie, creators of the Halo series. Keep in mind that you need to have an account there in order to cast your vote. The top seeds are Activision Blizzard, Ubisoft, Turbine, Nintendo. Good luck to Firaxis. My main question on this is, why is Firaxis seated in the Western Division?
Yeah, that was a question that some people had had. What I should have done is I should have read the thread on the Escapists, because they have a March Mayhem forum, and there's one thread that had about the rules. And if I had read that yesterday, I could have saved myself time, because what I did is I went through all of the companies in the Western Division and looked up where they were headquartered. Trying to figure out if they had a U.S.-based office, but in fact, the answer was right in that thread, which I found this morning, and I said a bad word. So the answer from the brand manager for the Escapist, Jeff Spinwiz Palumbo, quote, the divisions are just title placeholders, so there aren't four brackets that look exactly the same. That would be too confusing, unquote. And it's not confusing now.
I thought it was Firaxis's fans just traveled well.
There you go.
Hey, hang on a second. You're still west compared to us in Europe, so, you know.
There you go.
We could be the East, you think?
First of all, Dan, you have way too much time on your hands. Secondly, anyone who has followed the NCAA tournament realizes that everyone doesn't get slotted into the exact areas in which they're in. In fact, this year, the top four teams all come from the East, so someone has to go to the West.
They need to sell those bracket names to corporate sponsors. There you go. That's what they need to do. Get rid of that East-West.
Oh, so then we'd have what the NVIDIA division and the ATI division. And
there you go.
Now, Dan, when you read it, were the seeds also done randomly, or did they actually try to make it, you know?
I didn't see anything specific about that. I think part of it, at the very least, is based on last year's performance. If there were companies that were in there last year,
oh, because I don't get why Sega is rated 9 in North Division. It's Sega, damn it.
Turbine, for instance, which beat out Harmonix. Turbine did Lord of the Rings Online and Harmonix did Rock Band. Turbine beat Harmonix to get the top, so it became the top seed in the North Division. Whereas Harmonix, it was second, right, in the overall competition. It got second in the East Division, even though it performed better than the top seed in the East Division.
Wait.
So I honestly don't know how they did that.
Did you just say that Turbine won it all last year?
Yes.
Yes.
Like the entire thing?
Yes, I did.
Oh, fuck this thing then.
Oh, the power of fanboy.
I have no respect for it anymore. Let's talk about something else.
Part of the reason that I chose this topic is there are often polls about, ooh, the top games of the year, or the top games of all time, or the top games of this, and the top games of that. I've seen one where it was Developer Showdown, so I thought, I realize this is all in fun, there isn't anything major, I doubt any game company is going to put this on the back of the box, their next release, that they got top developer, but I don't know that for sure.
If they get desperate enough.
Yeah, how do you know? Did you get a Turbine game?
So I don't know how that they were ranked. I don't know, for instance, why Firaxis was rated 6th in the West Division and Bungie was rated 11th. But what I then tried to figure out was, how did Firaxis end up against Bungie in the first round? Some people in the thread were like, oh, two of my favorite game developers, or they're the developers of two of my favorite series. I shouldn't have to make this decision so early on. Well, if we could figure out how they decided on the seeding, then the next part makes sense. What happened? In each division, the first-ranked developer went up against number 16 at the bottom of the division. So one went against 16, two went against 15, and so on.
Yeah.
Down the list. So there is consistency with that, but it still doesn't explain how they exactly got the seeding in each division. The advantage of recording this now is just the timelines worked out very nicely, because we're able to say whether Firaxis won or not, and the answer is no, it did not. Bungie won.
Yeah, I figured. Halo.
Boo.
However, it was very close. Firaxis had...
Advanced weaponry.
Firaxis had 1,220 votes, and Bungie had 1,313. So it was close. It was neck and neck.
Oh.
Somebody in the thread said that this was a thriller thread, so to speak. I suppose it ended up being that way. It was the closest. I went through and I looked at the results of all of the other divisions because, you know, that's what I do. And
wow.
Yeah, I did. It was the closest, barely. Because also in the West Division, there was Rare going up against Pandemic. And you see, Firaxis had 48.2% against Bungie, and Bungie had 51.8%. Whereas the percentage in Rare versus Pandemic was 48.3% and 51.7%. Ooh, big difference, as you can see.
That's a hanging chad right there.
The biggest blowout was in the South Division, Rockstar versus Quantic Dream, although I don't think that came as a surprise. Rockstar got 93.7% of the vote.
Yeah, I was hoping that, well, I mean, I wasn't hoping, but I was anticipating you saying, yeah, it was really close between us and Bungie. Bungie got 65%, we got 35%. Glad it was a little closer than that.
I read through the comments, some people were making a distinction between, they said, look, I do prefer Civ versus Halo, but this is not a, for instance, a Civ 4 versus Halo thread. Firaxis has done more than Civ. Bungie has done more than Halo. And because it's based on the developer, some people felt that and feel that Bungie has a closer connection to their community than Firaxis does, but they base that on the website.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Another way to consider it, this is from Solid State Mind. Say Firaxis to most people, and they'll respond, who? Say Bungie to most people, and yeah, they'll say, oh, Halo, but at least there's a clear-cut association between the developer and its works. No. Don't consider it that way. Sure, say Bungie to most people, and they'll say, oh, hey, Halo. Say Sid Meier to most people. I still think you might get more who's than we'd like to think you would, but I could be like, oh, Civ. Whereas, I mean that if you do say Firaxis to most people, they might say, who? What? But if you say Civ, even if they don't know Sid, or you say Sid's name, and they don't necessarily know Civ, they'll be like, oh, I know who you're talking about. So there is that association.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, all the box art, everything's titled Sid Meier's Civilization IV, Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. I don't think I've ever seen anything like Firaxis.
One of the things about that, they said, oh, before Smack, it was all with Microprose previous to that, though. So again, we're trying to assess a current developer company rather than what work they've done before. So that's dealing with different game developers or particularly prominent figureheads, for example, Sid Meier, or I don't know who's in charge of Bungie or who's prominent there. Again, where do you draw the line on that?
Having Sid's name on products, that is a legacy that goes back to Microprose days.
Yeah.
When you consider about it, Sid did not design Civilization 3. He did not design Civilization 4, but his name is on it.
That's very true.
Sid was the founder of the company. His money was invested in the company. So it was unlikely that all of a sudden, you know, we've got so-and-so's name on the title, and he's not with our company anymore. In Soren's case, he's no longer with Firaxis. He's at EA.
Oh, very true.
Now, elsewhere in this thread, less is more, and that's L-E-S is more.
Hmm.
Two major series in the running here, but I have to give the nod to Firaxis. Civilization is a far more influential title. I think that depends who you're talking to. If you were talking to people looking at numbers and units sold, they might not agree with you. But to me, I think Civilization is a far more influential title. One of my favorite comments is from John the Nerd. Firaxis, Halo is good for a couple of months, but Civilization is good for a couple of years.
There you go.
Or longer. One person said, considering I've said just one more turn playing Alpha Centauri enough times for the words to lose all meaning, Firaxis for the win. M-A-E-T, mate, said, I'm tempted to vote Bungie since Civ 4 ruined my social life by being so gosh darn addictive. From Tierra, I have never heard of Firaxis. What did they do to get more fame than Bungie?
What? Turn in your gamer card.
Good news with big, huge games for sale. With everything else in the economy and people are trying to save money, cut costs, and everything else. First it was disclosed that layoffs were coming, and now word is that if the game developer is not sold in the near future, the owner, THQ, will have to close it as part of its $200 million cost-cutting measures. Big Huge Games was purchased by THQ just 13 months ago and became a wholly owned subsidiary. It was founded in the year 2000 by Civ 2 and Alpha Centauri designer Brian Reynolds while at Microprose and Firaxis Games, respectively. Its the first title was a real-time strategy game, Rise of Nations, released in 2003. I guess we don't know who's offering to buy it, if anyone.
Well, that's a problem. From what I can perceive, there's no real interest. I mean, the company seems to have been relatively dormant in recent time. They've had no real products that have come out for probably a couple of years now. So, not looking good.
Well, I think they were supposed to be working maybe on an RPG, if I remember right. So I don't know if they're still going to continue that under at a different studio if that property is going with them or not.
Yeah, Big Huge is reportedly working on two unannounced projects. One was an RPG scheduled for release this year on the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC, as well as a separate Wii title. Did some greater searching, found out that they have disclosed the timeline, and they are looking for a buyer within 60 days.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Probably the best analysis I've seen of potential buyers was in the Flash of Steel blog by Troy Goodfellow, who has been a prolific computer games writer for nearly a decade. He noted that Microsoft already let Ensemble Studios go, which, of course, was a huge shock, considering its success. He also mentions EA is the quote-unquote obvious gobbling monster out there. But, of course, they've had recent layoffs and closures at that company, so that would be a curious acquisition. Take-Two Interactive, well, they own Firaxis, as we know, through 2K, and so they have a Maryland-based developer already, and they're not exactly in the best financial shape either to be buying anything from anybody. And then he says there's always the independent studio route, something embraced by the Ensemble refugees. This is the riskiest option, but there is too much talent for no one to take a chance on them, quote-unquote, and I think the independent route is probably their best bet. Someone had said that it was a 50-50 chance. We know what we know, but there are lots of things that we don't know, and I would say that 50-50 is the best that we're going to be able to say with that as well. As you also noted, Troy, it was only 13 months ago that THQ bought Big Huge Games, but 13 months ago, the economic outlook was a little bit different than it is now. THQ announced, we've got two other in-house developers. We're going to be spinning them off as separate companies. But Big Huge Games is the one that they said that they are going to close if they cannot find a buyer. And 60 days, they are really being quite aggressive as part of this $200 million cost-cutting measure, which includes laying off about 600 workers worldwide.
Uh-huh.
Big Huge is reported to have about 120 employees.
So, yes, nothing good.
THQ said the decision to sell or close Big Huge came down strictly to the numbers. They said they were looking to cut down on the number of releases annually of the types of games the studio specializes in.
Mm.
Now, we don't know how much THQ purchased BHG for. That was never released, but according to a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, it acquired BHG and two other firms in a cash and stock deal valued at $35.3 million last year.
Some of these executives, they get their bonuses out of that bottom line, and I don't know, sometimes their motivation to cut some divisions may be personal rather than investment. You'd hate to think so, but after AIG, et cetera.
Yeah.
Personally, I hope that the studio would be able to be saved, or at the very least hope that their employees are able to be retained very quickly by other companies.
But in this market, a lot of these people might not be retained simply because I don't think that a lot of people are necessarily buying all that many games. Someone like VR will definitely land on his feet. That's probably not going to be a very difficult for him comparatively. But I think for a lot of the other people at the company, they might have some difficulty.
Yeah, I think the problem is if the company tries to go independent, it's getting financial backing to continue doing what they're doing until they have a viable release. So that could be a long time and a lot of money. And getting money from banks at the moment is very difficult.
Well, they got to be getting some sort of severance package out of this, and maybe they're better off individually for a little while longer than if they were on their own.
Yeah, there's no bankruptcy declaration being declared, which has actually just been in the news here in Canada recently about Nortel, people being laid off while the company has been in bankruptcy protection. So they get no severance. They do need some kind of backing from other people in the industry, whether it's another developer, publisher that's already in existence or other people branding together, because last year it was noted that Reynolds had announced, in conjunction with being purchased by THQ and becoming a wholly owned subsidiary, that they were changing direction in order to find a new audience on the Wii. He did not disclose any details about their 200 development titles, but said the company needed the deeper pockets of a big publisher such as THQ to develop them.
Hmm.
Ooh.
There is that. Unfortunately, you know, small developers need a huge distributor in order to get their games out to a big audience unless they want to work for peanuts.
And also the capital to keep going until they have a good game, not just something they can shovel onto a DVD.
True.
It was noted that the employers received a Work Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act notice, or a WARN, which is in the United States, is a requirement of employers to notify of any impending shutdown if the company has 100 or more people working for it. We've already noted that. And the shutdown is impending in a 30-day period. So it could very well be that we're looking for a buyer in the next 60 days, but you could infer that after 30 days, we're going to shut it down, at least in kind of a holding pattern situation. And then if another 30 days go by and there isn't a buyer, then the doors are closed permanently.
Hmm. I like that the acronym is to WARN, though.
I'm sure that was a complete coincidence.
They didn't work backwards at all.
I mentioned Troy Goodfellow, a writer over at GameSpy. I can never pronounce this guy's last name properly, but that's a Polycast tradition. Alan Rusk, he said that Big Huge Games is an investment by THQ that is yet to pay off. As much as I like the people there and as talented as I know they are, when you're a CEO looking to cut jobs to save money, you go with the underperforming divisions. That's just the ugly reality of the situation. I was really hoping that the next time we talked about Big Huge Games was when they announced Rise of Nations 2 or something, because we cover Rise of Nations here in Apolton at apolton.net/Ron.
Hmm.
But, wow. Surprised me, and then I started thinking, I guess after what happened with Ensemble Studios, it shouldn't have surprised me that something like this came about, like a big studio, but I guess it came as a bigger surprise because of the connection that we have to the studio and the people that are involved in the studio, those that we know.
Yeah, another casualty of the times.
Exactly. Today, in North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at the Polycast.
Or email us at polycast@apolton.net.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolton.net.
One of the early competitions on that.
Oh, on the Plus.
On the Poly Plus, yeah. Because I correctly identified a bird having sex with another bird on a window.
Oh. What? Huh?
What was that?
Did someone give you a gift subscription or something? Is that how that happened?
Yeah, there was a competition early on. There was an image posted, and you had to correctly pick what it was, and if you got it right, you got a free month of Poly Plus.
If you were invited to come back on the show, would you?
Oh, yeah, certainly would.
Woo!
Woo! Rich, same question?
Well, I said I'd retire now, but I still end up coming on. No, I won't do it, I'm sure.
And, of course, every once in a while, me or Mackie asks Dan, are you going to ask us? Oh, you forgot a bit of news. I actually played Civ.
Yes,
it's true, it's true.
Stop the press. Imran's actually played a game of Civ this year.
I don't feel so bad for not playing Doom 2 now.
I'd like to thank you all for tuning into Polycast tonight, and I've been Richard Harrison. There's been Makalua.
Hi.
Rickley.
Hi.
Imran.
So say we all.
Very good.
Dan.
Goodbye.
And who else have we got? Who have I missed? God, say goodbye. I can't remember.
That would be me, Dojo Boy. See ya.
Bye-bye.
This guy might spend $200 on a game. You know, I might spend that much on, like... Oh, wait.
Where do you live?
When you were midway through the sentence, I thought, how much of the rest of the sentence am I going to have to bleep? Oh, boy.
Most of it.
We make guest co-hosts work now on the show. Just so you know.
Okay. Oh, well, never mind.
You know, like web-based, like Java-based puzzle privates.
Pirates.
Pirates. Pirates? I don't know what I said, but I knew it wasn't the right
puzzle
word.
Privates. Okay, Dan.
Puzzle privates. That was not intentional. Puzzle privates.
Those damn privates.
Yar. Okay, what did you people put in your coffee this morning? Because I don't think that was sugar.
Whiskey. What?
A little bit of fiber.
What was that?
I didn't actually sing it.
Dan has forgotten the no musical.
Since he hummed it, he came.
No musical interludes from Dan, period.
No, there is no music rule.
As long as you're aware of that expectation, it would be nice if there would then be a way for you to be able to continue to do that.
Oh!
Oh!
The pirates are coming after him. The privates are coming after him.
not very critical, not looking for things to make critical statements on when I'm listening. I'm just enjoying the show.
Okay, well then tell us everything you love about the show then.
No pressure. Beat Dan's ego, please.
Record date?
March 21st, 2009.
Civilization 4, Warlords and Beyond the Sword sound clips copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright 2009, Appulton Civilization site at appulton.net.